Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Is Donald Trump's foreign policy really America first, or is it more Trump Inc. first?
The fourth Trump Tower arrived in Delhi NCR with a big bang, selling 20 apartments on the very first day out of 250 plus on offer.
That's a commercial from CNBC TV in India, and it kicks off a new WNYC podcast called Trump Inc., hosted by WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Meretz and Eric Umansky from ProPublica. They are all here with us as the podcast is launching today, and it reveals just how much commercials like that are selling the president's brand by using the president's title.
Under the brand license from the Trump Organization, led by Donald Jr. Trump, son of the U.S. president.
And not just his title, you might even get to press the flesh.
First 100 buyers of Trump Tower get to fly to New York to be hosted by Trump Jr. himself.
Of course, who really cares about meeting Don Jr., right? So how about the brochure they sent out last June from the Trump golf course in New Jersey that said if you book your wedding there, the president himself might drop by? And sure enough, last August.
Everyone having a good time?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, listeners, no matter what your marital status is, part of this new podcast is that you can help report it. So here with us to explain and to play us some more clips and take your calls are WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Meretz and Eric Umansky from ProPublica, the co-hosts of the new podcast, Trump Inc. Hi, Ilya. Hi, Andrea. Hi, Eric.
Hey, good morning.
Brian. Hey there.
Andrea, what's the concept?
So we have been working together with ProPublica for over a year, as you know, on various stories. Probably the biggest story we did together was on the Trump Soho. And after that, we sat down to have a meeting to say, well, what story should we do now? And we put up all of these stories on the whiteboard right in our conference room here. And we thought the thing that unified them together was just how much a year into his presidency we still don't understand, even though we've sort of put our full force of investigative reporting, both news organizations and many others, on this. So we decided to do a podcast as a way to sort of unify our own reporting, bring in other investigative journalists, bring in citizen journalists, and to be able to say, here are the things we know, here are the things we're finding out, and here are the things we don't know. Help us understand this. So we're calling it an open investigation, and that is what has led to this joint WNYC ProPublica podcast, which is our first co-production.
And listeners will tell you how you can help in a minute, but Eric Umansky from ProPublica, that clip of Trump attending the wedding at his New Jersey golf course.
Wonderful
that,
thing.
That came from ProPublica reporting, didn't it?
I have to tell you, I can't quite remember if that is the case.
So my impression was that you had discovered that somebody at your organization had discovered that that advertisement in the spring. But that's okay. You want to add anything to
that
or not?
Sure. No, I mean, you know, we've been doing a tremendous amount of reporting, as Andrea said, about Trump's businesses, and digging in, you know, from the very first day of his presidency on Inauguration Day, we published a story in which we looked at Trump's promise that he had made 10 days before, saying, I am going to remove myself from management of the businesses. So we called around to all these states and asked Derek Kravitz, one of our research editors, did this along with Al Shaw. They called around and they said, has he removed himself from management of those businesses? Because there's state records that show it. The answer was no. And by the way, even that would have been wholly inadequate
And we'll get to that compared to what the usual standards are. But Ilya, the tape of the Trump real estate TV commercial from India, that came exactly the way you hope some listeners will help you report this story, right?
Yeah, and I think actually the same kind of goes for the Trump wedding, which is, you know, the Trump organization is not putting out press releases and telling us what they're doing, and the White House is not disclosing very much about its ongoing ties to the Trump organization. So it's really up to us as citizens, us as journalists, to notice this stuff, find out about it, sort through it, put it all together, and figure out what it means. And when we were putting together our first episode of this podcast and we started lining up some of the things that have happened over the past year, Kellyanne Conway promoting Ivanka's brand on TV, Donald Trump's wedding business at his golf course in Bedminster, going to Seoul, South Korea, and promoting his golf club. I mean, that was in his remarks to the national legislature. Huh. He talked about the women's golf championship that had been held at his golf course. This is very, very, very different territory from anywhere that we've been in any of our lifetimes. And you, dear listener, can help us even just by noticing a thing. Maybe you're driving around Indonesia and you see a sign for the new Indonesia project. Send it our way. I'm not sure exactly how we want to get that out there, but
trumpincpodcast.org.
That's right.
So you want to go again?
Trumpincpodcast.org has all the instructions for both confidential tips and questions. If people want to call in.
Pictures, voice memos. There's a lot of different ways that this stuff could come at us.
Trumpincpodcast.org. And because you're here for a few minutes, what the heck, dear listeners, let's open up the phones, because who knows what kind of tip might float in right now. Or if you have any questions for our guests, the three co-hosts of this new podcast from WNYC and ProPublica, Trump Inc., 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So, Andrea, why should people care about this if they don't already hate Donald Trump for other reasons? I mean, people could ask, who cares if a businessman's business keeps making money for the years he's in office, as long as he's getting policy right?
Well, what is different about this president from any president in modern history, and we sort of go through this at length in the episode, is how he has not divested and he has not put his assets in a blind trust. And because this is a White House that discloses so little, ProPublica has tried to get all kinds of records, visitor records, records from who is visiting the president at Mar-a-Lago. The White House keeps rejecting these things. So because there's such a lack of transparency, it's impossible for us to be able to tell in whose interest is the president acting. Is he acting in the country's interest, or is he acting in his company's interest? And in fact, there's a clip of tape in the podcast where the president says country when he means company, when he means to say country. So there's a sort of, you know, confusion in his own mind. And that, you know, what...
Either a Freudian slip or a Forbesian slip. I'm not sure which. So here's another little stretch from the podcast. That's the moment way back just after the election when Trump is announcing how he'll separate himself from his businesses. But between the two Trump clips here, you will hear the voice of Walter Schaub, who was director of the U.S. Office of Government Ethics, first Trump.
These papers are just some of the many documents that I've signed, turning over complete and total control to my sons.
I just remember watching with dismay as the worst of my fears were coming to pass.
But as a president, I could run the Trump Organization, great, great company, and I could run the company, the country. I'd do a very good job, but I don't want to do that.
There it was. There was that Forbesian slip. So, Eric, why did Walter Schaub, director of the Office of Government Ethics, hear those words by the president-elect as what he said were his worst fears coming true?
So there's a very basic standard that's been developed over time. The president, because they are in charge of everything, right? They can't remove themselves from conflicts of interest, right? You can't say, I'm not going to deal with educational issues because, I own an education company, or I'm not going to deal with oil issues because I own an oil company. You're in charge of everything. That's what we hired, the people hired you for, right? So the way that the standard protocol that ethics experts say is necessary is to divest. You simply can't own. You can't have active businesses that you own that may have their own interests in which you can operate and make money for those things in ways that may run counter to the nation, right? So it's a pretty standard thing. Mm-hmm. You have to divest. And there was all sorts of stuff that was being said at that press conference by Sherry Dillon, the president's lawyer. And what she did not say and what essentially set Walter Schaub's hair on fire and what we noticed, too, is there was nothing about divestment.
So here's one more clip of Walter Schaub, director of the Office of Government Ethics, on Trump not divesting himself of his holdings or putting them in a blind trust, but just turning over management to his sons.
I think Politico called this a half-blind trust, but it's not even halfway blind. The only thing it has in common with a blind trust is the label, trust. His sons are still running the business, and of course, he knows what he owns.
And of course, he knows what he owns. Is it a sham separation, Ilya?
It's not a meaningful separation. We know from an interview that Eric Trump gave to Forbes magazine that he communicates with his dad about how the company is doing pretty regularly. And if you look at the social media feeds of Don Jr. and Eric, they are constantly tweeting about their dad. So the boundary that we were told was going to be put up there, this wall that we were told was going to be put up between the Trump organization, the Trump business, and the White House has not come to pass. In fact, when you really look at what happened over the past year, it's become blurrier and blurrier. This is exactly what Walt Schaub was afraid of. And you know, one thing I didn't really understand before we talked to Walter Schaub and before we started doing this podcast was it was 9 days before the inauguration that Walt Schaub was hoping to hear what the plan was. The Trump team really put this off to the last minute, and that tells you how seriously they took the question, which is not that seriously.
I think it's also worth noting that just in this week, while we've been putting the finishing touches on the last episode of the first episode of Trump Inc., the three stories have come out about questions of where is the line. The New York Times did a story about how payday lenders, these are the people that are really not being regulated by Trump. They make loans basically to poor people on the day they get paid at high interest rates. They're very pleased with the Trump presidency's hands-off approach to them, and B, they're having a party at the Trump Doral Resort later this spring where there's a Donald Trump room and an Ivanka Trump room. So it's really hard to figure out what is the line. President Trump, for $50,000 this week, advertised that people can have dinner with him at the Mar-a-Lago as a fundraiser for his 2020 campaign. So it is almost impossible to tell. I mean, it's hard for us to remember when we're saying country and when we're saying company.
And we're really seeing the gulf now between norms and laws. And the laws haven't been fully tested. We don't know entirely what the law will say when some of these challenges to some of Trump's actions make their way through the courts. But so much of what previous presidents of both parties have done is actually just cleaving to the norms.
And let me just emphasize one thing in terms of what Andrea was saying, the payday lenders, for example, right? That is one example of many where you have people paying money to the president's company, right? This happens to be one that is public, right? But there is no actual requirement for all these things to be public. That is an unprecedented situation where you have people putting money ultimately into the president's pocket without the citizens of the country knowing. That's just a vital, vital thing that we should be paying attention to.
Let's take a call. Ben in Clifton, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. I wanted to see, you started touching on this just now, but are there mechanisms for actually addressing this? The ethics office seems like it just doesn't have any enforcement mechanism. It's kind of setting or reflecting the norm. You know, these are the kinds of things where if a private citizen would do something like have information about policy changes and then make business decisions based on that, they'd go to jail for insider trading. So are there mechanisms for enforcing what might or might not be law?
Anybody know?
Well, the law that the president is operating under is the Ethics Reform Act of 1989, which does exempt the president from conflict of interest, but for the reason that Eric said, because you don't want the president to be restricted in his or maybe someday her actions. So, but what the president has done is turned it on his head and said, I have a no conflict situation. So where most of the legal activity has taken place is on whether the president is violating the Emoluments Clause. And there are four lawsuits out there in the world, which is that he is not allowed to get payments from foreign governments. And there's a dispute about whether when people go to his companies or go to Mar-a-Lago or buy a condo, that they're in some way giving a gift to the president.
Didn't a judge just rule that that is not a violation of the Emoluments Clause, those kinds of transactions?
What the judge ruled, this was Judge Daniels right here in the Southern District, ruled that was that the people who sued the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington didn't have standing, but not that it wasn't a
violation.
Right. He didn't defend the president's actions. He's just said that they couldn't bring the lawsuit. Now, that is on appeal, and there are three other ones going on.
I mean, to me, this boils down to, it all boils down to a pretty unsatisfying answer, which is that there are very few mechanisms and rules that the president has to abide by and follow. So, I mean, honestly, that's why we're doing this project, not because we can necessarily change that, but because we can shine a light on it and show it happening.
We'll continue in a minute with the three co-hosts of our new WNYC ProPublica podcast, Trump, Inc., Ilya Meritz, Andrea Bernstein, and Eric Umansky, right after this. We're on WNYC, and we have a few more minutes with the three co-hosts of the new WNYC ProPublica podcast, Trump, Inc., which is looking at the ways that the Trump business empire and Trump as president of the United States are kind of mixing in ways that could be against the public interest, and they are looking for tips. So if you see anything that gives you any questions at all about businesses that the president is still involved with or might be involved with, they are looking for tips that they can report out. And we'll give you the phone number that you can call at the end of the segment, a special question line. But for now, you can call our usual on-air number with a tip or a question, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for ProPublica's Eric Umansky and WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Meritz. And Andrea and Ilya, in the podcast, you itemize some of the ways that Trump is most brazenly using the presidency as a profit center. Last New Year's Day, they doubled the dues for joining Mar-a-Lago to $200,000. That was just, you know, a couple of months after the election. Then in February, who could forget this Kellyanne Conway moment on TV?
Go buy Ivanka's stuff is what I would say. I'm going to go get some on myself today.
Then in March, Ilya, you say Eric Trump admitted something. What was that?
He admitted that he still talks to his dad about the balance sheet of Trump Org. He's still discussing profit and loss. They're communicating about the business. And, you know, in some sense, this is not surprising, right? Donald Trump spent 50-odd years as a businessman of various types in golf courses and casinos and hotels and other stuff, reality TV. He's only had a year in public service. He'd never been elected to anything before. So it's not entirely surprising that this would happen, but it is completely unprecedented because all the presidents in my lifetime have put their assets, such as they were, and they were generally less, in a blind trust where they didn't know who was managing it. They didn't know if they were making money.
And Andrea, the next thing on your list is that Ivanka is then hired as an actual White House aide working for her father and officially for the people of the United States. That was after Kellyanne Conway went on television and said she was going to buy Ivanka's stuff. So technically at that time, it was not a conflict of interest. But what happens to the money from all that Ivanka stuff now that she's an official public servant and Kellyanne Conway is presumably still buying it?
Well, we won't know entirely until new ethics forms are filed this year, but we do know that Ivanka also did not put her assets into a blind trust. And it's worth just pausing to note a moment. I mean, one of the things as we were covering the story is I kept trying to go back in time to our mindset. Remember before the president hired his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and there was an actual debate about whether that would be appropriate and whether it violated nepotism statutes? But then he did it anyway, and he is obviously also an extremely wealthy businessman with his own real estate empire, and he did not fully divest. And then just a couple months later, the president's daughter, who has a business that depends on the marketing of the name Ivanka Trump. Not only is she part of the real estate business, but she also has her own jewelry and handbags and clothing that she sells. So all of that sort of goes into the category of a norm breaking down. So not only does the president have his business, but his daughter, his son-in-law, who are also working in the government. And I could also add that he also appointed incredibly rich cabinet members who there are also questions raised about whether they are fully separated from their business.
Michael in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Brian. I've been listening to this segment. I had a question for the reporters. I was doing some work at Trump Tower in 2015 after he had announced his election. And in the employee entrance to the building and in the employee elevators, everything was plastered with Trump campaign slogans. They were handing out Trump hats and signs to their employees. And especially because so many of these people are immigrants from Latin America, I wondered if their rights as employees for the Trump Organization were violated by being subjected to political campaigning at the workplace.
Right. So this kind of turns it around the other way. Did the politics interfere with these people's rights as private citizens? But Eric, you have any thought? I see you furrowing your brow.
No, it's a good question. I don't know that it, and Andrea actually might know more about the campaign finance side of things, that it violates any laws. I mean, I know there are laws you can't, you know, force an employee to campaign on your behalf, for example. But, you know, if it's simply in the workplace, I think it falls into this vast and very common realm that we're seeing nowadays of kind of icky, but not necessarily illegal.
I think, though, this is something I haven't really thought about that much, which is sort of the Trump org employees and workers who may be somehow contributing to the campaign. I thank you for bringing it to our attention, and I think it's something that we'll pursue and look into. And this is, you know, exactly the kind of thing that we hope is going to happen.
One more example of the president promoting his private brands in his public service role. After the white supremacist rally and killing in Charlottesville last summer, while Trump was saying there were good people on both sides of that, he also slipped in this.
I own actually one of the largest wineries in the United States. It's in Charlottesville.
Whoa. As it turns out, I think it's the largest winery in Virginia, but not one of the largest wineries
in the United
States. The largest
by acreage, but not by production.
So if you want...
in Virginia.
I guess you looked into this. In Virginia. So if you want to buy your Red State Valentine a nice red wine, maybe the Cabernet Sauvignon with the name Trump in prominent lettering on the label, or maybe for Columbus Day, their New World Reserve. You can do that.
I mean, it really shows how much his business is on his mind. If he goes to a place and does a thing, he's going to connect to the closest thing that the closest flag that he has in that place, I think.
Also, what is just so stunning about this example, I mean, this was a moment of national crisis.
Right.
And somebody had been murdered. And, you know, there was neo-Nazis on television yelling anti-Semitic chants. And it is shocking that in the context the president would plug his business, but it's become so normalized that it goes by so quickly. And one of the things we're trying to do with Trump Inc. podcast is just kind of dwell on that. What is happening? Let's note it. And let's see if we can't connect some of the dots and make a bigger picture here.
So we're just about out of time. And obviously, we've just scratched the surface here. Listeners, we pulled some clips to play for you on the show today from the debut edition of the Trump Inc. podcast. You can hear the whole thing by subscribing to the new podcast, Trump Inc., which just dropped its first episode today. Get it wherever you get your podcast. It's free. And Andrew, just give us a sense of what's to come. How often will the episodes come? How long is the season? And then one more time, how people can contribute these kinds of tips that you're looking for.
So we're doing 12 episodes right now. They're going to be weekly episodes. And next week coming up is an episode that involves gambling and money laundering and the biggest vine in U.S. history and the Trump Taj Mahal. So it's a story that has, again, one of these stories that slipped by but has become newly relevant in light of the investigations that are going on now. So we'll be
coming out every Wednesday morning.
Every Wednesday morning. And we also have, you know, a sort of all-star cast of friends that people will be hearing. Many of them are known in public radio. The New Yorker's Adam Davidson is going to be prominent in a upcoming issue. The Washington Post's David Farenthold, who is known for his investigative reporting. So we're really trying to bring in the people who are talking about this. And if listeners have tips that they want to send us securely, there's a way to do it. It's all detailed at trumpincpodcast.org. And we're going to be having a call-in line there where people can call in and ask questions of us or ask us things that they'd like us to follow, and we'll be trying to respond in future episodes.
And that phone number, I have it right here, is 347-244-2134. That's area code 347-244-2134. Trump Inc. from WNYC and ProPublica. We thank ProPublica's Eric Umansky.
Thank you.
And WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Mertz.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.